All right, so I'm going to give you a little bit of background on IHE, which is interoperability, interconnecting the healthcare enterprise. Public health in the last 2 years now of IHE has gotten more involved trying to find out how do we start specifying our criteria, giving our requirements to the system vendors who we are expecting to build systems for us, and how do we start leveraging interoperability with the health information systems, the electronic health records as they start moving forward. You want to be able to take advantage of that data, capture that data, and use it for public health purposes. Just a little bit about my background. I facilitate the HSP population health population perspective, TC, as it's now been named. I'm very heavily involved in standards, vice convener in ISO TC215 security and ASTM, health informatics security and privacy. So I live in the standards world and very much look to try to implement things in the real world. So where are the public health interests addressed in IHE? IHE came in with a white paper, Public Health Data Standards Consortium last year produced a white paper on building a roadmap for health information systems interoperability with public health, and again, how do we connect those systems to the electronic health records. And last year in IHE, we also, in parallel, did a white paper in collaboration with quality initiatives, with research initiatives, and as a result found that there were quite a number of things in common, at least from the perspective where public health is repurposing data, but public health also has clinical care purposes and initiatives in healthcare. So what you'll end up seeing is that the public health interests have multiple domains in which these things are addressed in IHE. There is a new domain that is called quality research in public health. Floyd is one of the technical committee co-chairs. There are also planning committees that are associated with each of these domains where it is the avenue for you to put in your business requirements, and then they get picked up by the technical committees to fulfill the technical requirements. They are leveraging, for public health, we need to leverage the profiles and initiatives from multiple domains. So we'll see it in the new quality research and public health profiles that can be used for public health purposes, but also in patient care coordination and IT infrastructure, how we're going to start moving the data around in common fashions. Oops. Okay. So focusing on the quality research in public health, this is a new domain. It was established in 2007, essentially as a result of the joint white paper initiative. It had initially been just quality, and now it's been broadened. The scope of that is to look at the integration issues for clinical data repurposing. I won't even say the other word that's mentioned there. Quality research and public health addresses the specifications for patient selection, how we go to get to the individual data reporting, aggregate data reporting, considerations for privacy and security surrounding that to enable public health to collaborate and coordinate their activities. The sponsors of this new domain are HIMSS, the Radiological Society of North America, and the American Heart Association. There have been two white papers so far out of quality research in public health. One of them was the first one produced last year when it was focused on quality. It's just patient-level export of quality data, which identifies a set of IT infrastructure and patient care coordination profiles. This is the first place you're seeing bringing more than one domain together to build this use case so that they can retrieve the quality data that needs to from multiple systems, multiple clinical systems, and make that data available for quality reporting and subsequent aggregation. That framework can also be extended to research and public health purposes. There is now a white paper for performance measurement data, elements structured for electronic health record extractions, and this is intended to identify standard mechanisms to get the quality measures from the electronic health record systems, a bit more of a drill down from the initial white paper. There were two profiles this year. that are essentially started in the research domain. The clinical research data capture is specifying how to pre-populate another IT infrastructure profile for electronic retrieval, enabling forms for data capture, things like public health case reporting and in research cases, those things that are in part in your electronic health record where we want to automatically populate it and then subsequently add the data that is not typically kept in electronic format. There's also a drug safety content profile, again looking at the pre-population parameters for the content of what needs to be extracted from an electronic health record and put into a drug safety report. From patient care coordination, now we're getting into more of the clinical care. A little bit of background on that committee. It was established in 2005, and its intent is to enable look at the integration issues that across the providers, the patient problems, or over time. General clinical care aspects like document exchange, order processing, how you coordinate with other specialty care domains to deliver care to the patient. It looks at some of the workflows and integration needs with the specialty areas. The sponsors of that domain are the are HIMSS and the American College of Physicians, and several participating professional societies include the American College of Obstetricians and Gynecologists, the American College of Emergency Physicians, and includes 98 organizational members. And those members are international. IHE is an international group. A content profile then. So what is this that they're building? It's a shareable information component that can be exchanged either within a health information exchange or otherwise we've talked about them as being a RIO. In this case, those may be leveraging some of the infrastructure, which I'll talk about a little bit more, of document sharing or over media or using reliable messaging, which is, as I understand it, currently used with some of the CDC exchanges. Document content using standards such as CDA Release 2, HL7 Continuity of Care Document, which HITSB is leveraged as C32. And it's looking to build a library of reusable parts. Number of standards are used within there. Much of the work, but not all of the work, is leverages the CDA Release 2. The ASTM HL7 Joint Work for Continuity of Care document is a focal point of much of the underlying information exchange for medications, allergies, and problem lists. It is overlaid over any of the document sharing messaging media or reliable messaging. It includes such things as notification of document availability, document digital signature, and XHTML, XSLT. The properties are that it's human readable. This is of the content profiles that are leveraging the CDA work. They can be machine processable. They're digital signature enabled, so we can have source authentication and attestation. Again, they're shareable in multiple ways. So of the profiles that have been generated, those that are inside the box have been generated through the end of last year, and you'll see we're starting to address the public health initiatives. We had this year, again, based on the Public Health Data Standards Consortium white paper, focused on immunization registry content and cancer registry content. There's a query for existing data is one of the messaging queries that enables lookup of immunization content and other content such as vaccinations and other types of clinical queries. And care management is a new profile as well this year that is looking to help coordinate the clinical practice guidelines and the ability to encode and automate that process. I'm not going to drill down, but you have in the material the value propositions of the medical summaries, but the focus, if you go to any health information exchange, the first thing that they seem to want to exchange is demographics, problems, allergies, medications. And then they start wanting to look at some of the other material, depending on your specialty, to start drilling down on the content. This it also supports the interchange of personal health record information, again, starting with demographics, but now when you're starting to talk about supporting the personal health records, you need to talk about insurance information and enabling that to be automatically delivered to the clinician. We have health histories and other information, you know, history of smoking and those types of things that are also of interest when we're trying to capture information from the patient or self-reported information. It's supporting information as described in AHIMA, PHR, HL7 PHR, and again, it's compatible with the CCD and C32s. The ED encounter summary was from last year. This is a very comprehensive view of when you go to the emergency room. It supports the capture of the data from their laboratories, the emergency department visit, and it's made the visit available in an interoperable sense to folks such as the primary care physician and the longitudinal health record support for that. Query for existing data allows for one-on-one query from, say, the electronic health record. What we demonstrated in HIMSS last year was interoperability with an immunization registry to be able to do a dynamic query. It also supports the drug safety, the quality reporting, claim submission, et cetera. Immunization content. Aline covered some of this content and is actually the one of the primary editors of this document. It is looking to improve the capture and management of the patient histories, allow that to become more complete, trying to allow that to better interoperate, to collect it in a more effective fashion from the electronic health record, to bridge somehow between the version 2 connectivity and the health information exchange infrastructures that are being leveraged by the electronic health record systems. Cancer registry pathology report started out inpatient care coordination, was developed as a profile, and during the public comment period this year, there were some additional eyes that were looked at internationally, and there is a pathology domain in IHE that is going to pick up this work and bring it into more detailed pathology level. So that's being proposed to be brought through to a 2009 pathology profile. The care management value, the care management profile is looking to be able to get capture and administer guidelines for public health. For instance, the cancer registries, immunization system registries were used as examples during the development of that work, and chronic disease management systems. And this is just some of the details of the transactions and actors that are involved in the care management profile. Now, the IT infrastructure domain is the plumbing behind all of the interoperability here, and there's one domain that addresses security, privacy, and infrastructure within IHE. We'll see many of those. We do have an interoperability showcase in the exhibit hall here, and you'll see several examples of interoperability using these infrastructure and content profiles to support public health exchanges for biosurveillance, for case reporting, for immunizations, infrastructure, and quality. The interoperability infrastructure component represents the the IT infrastructure services, the functionalities. They tend to be used as a building block for a variety of cases. In some cases, they're embedded in an application. In other cases, they might be a shared service that might be available to a health information exchange, and most often is not something that's obvious to the end user. Okay. I'll let this one go ahead and build. So we have all the document content profiles that are coming out of the patient care coordination domain and the ability then to move those components around using the various infrastructure components. There are several IT infrastructure components that can be leveraged for public health that are not new. Again, this is the plumbing. It's been around. We're trying to reuse what's been built. We've already talked about the document sharing, the reliable interchange in media. There's the patient identifier cross-reference manager, which is a way of resolving patient identities and keeping those within what they call an affinity domain that has been cited by and specified by HITSPE. And that allows for patient demographic queries and suppliers to be able to interact with that service. There's the retrieve form for data capture, which was originally intended for research profiles and supporting the research domain, but has, as we started looking at those requirements, they expanded the use case to include the ability to do some of the case reporting. The security infrastructure included the audit repository. It includes time services, so when multiple systems and different organizations talk to one another, your audit logs are going to make sense and you can actually track what happens between them. There's personnel white pages, which is like a directory of persons' identities within a particular domain. There's cross-enterprise user assertions, which are high assurance or support high assurance security components using SAML. There's cross-community access, which is essentially one of the infrastructure components being tested by the NHANES to go from one health information exchange domain to the other, leveraging many of the transactions specified by the PICS profile as well. There's basic patient privacy consents. This is not a high level of granularity as might be the holy grail of the personal health record, but it is certainly gives a good starting point to be able to allow a patient to express consent, to allow a health information exchange to manage those consents, and to be able to label various sensitivity classes of data. There's the sharing of scanned documents, which we have looked at this year in the HITSPE process as of being able to capture some of that alerting information and types of information that have that have content that you want to have presentation preserving, as we called it, to be able to distribute that information either specifically on one individual patient or it might be a general type. And then there's digital signatures. So what's new in IT infrastructure, Elaine is also bringing forward a need for pediatric demographics. So she looked at the PICS and PDQ and said, you know, there are things that we need for supporting immunization registries that are not in the specification. We need to expand on that. So we've a profile there to support the immunization through pediatric demographics. There's a referral request. This is more of the patient care coordination. You might see something like this in safety net or underinsured, uninsured, where I guess public health is getting involved in the care process, but to help facilitate the automation of the referral process, not just sending of a record, but being able to process that record. And there's the emergency contact registry. The emergency responders are looking to try to bring in and bridge the person identification and health records from between the police and the emergency responder systems and trying to tap into the health record systems to better care for the patient on site and support any emergencies. And that is a first step in a longer-term interoperability initiative supporting emergency response. Sharing of value sets supports public health and quality and research to be able to synchronize the content of terminologies across the various applications. It's part of one of those keys to semantic interoperability. We need to be able to communicate in common languages and value sets and be able to exchange those in order to enable automation of that. Publish and subscribe was actually a profile that was requested initially through our HITSPE biosurveillance work, where we said, yes, we can use this document sharing infrastructure, but it's a bit burdensome to have to go out and poll all the time. I really would like to be able to subscribe to data of interest. And there are other clinical use cases, such as a primary care physician wanting to subscribe to data of their patients as well. So we have a profile for that for this year as well. Okay. So participation as a provider or vendor, you know, you can come and participate in the committees, the technical committees or the planning committees, depending on what your level of involvement is in the development. As a vendor, some of the vendors don't actually participate in the development of the engineering, but they are implementers of that, and they'll enable their products, they can test their products, demonstrate, and enable their ability to service their customers. And then as a provider or consultant participant, there's education workshops, there's the ability to bring in the RFPs and integration projects and try to leverage these profiles to help in some of the deployment activities. Okay. There's a link, you can find all of it on IHE.net. And within that, there's also some extended capabilities. So those vendors that will go to what they call a connectathon testing will test that their products can interoperate with one another, and then they will they'll get a gold star, essentially, that proves that they have tested with at least three other vendors. Then they can put in an integration statement, product specific, so I can go up as a user and look up and say, I'm using XYZ system version 2.1. Does it support the profiles that I need? And I can then help architect or put in the requirements of a health information exchange through that. Okay. The development schedule, it's a very rapid cycle. The technical committees will typically meet face-to-face in the planning committees actually start in November. I'm used to starting at the November timeframe. October, November, we bring new profile proposals in. The planning committee prioritizes those proposals and sends off to the technical committee a request for new work to be done. And then the technical committee will evaluate based on the resources and the editors and who's going to be involved and whether or not there's likely uptake in implementation, and sends back to the planning committee a recommendation that of what you've asked for, these are our priorities for this year. And then they start to meet face-to-face, the March, May, and June face-to-face meetings. They spend a solid week with all of the engineers of the companies actually architecting how those products should work together, or pulling in the underlying standards and specifying the interoperability profiles. It goes out for public comment for 1 month, comes back, and it's updated to, for trial implementation. Then in September, those that are going to sign up for testing for it, that will go through an implementation process, go through a connectathon testing, and then we'll typically do a demonstration at HIMSS in April. So what we're seeing here in Finn is essentially those things that were tested and demonstrated at HIMSS in 2008 or in Finn 2008. Same thing happened last year for the 2007 cycle. Okay. This just gives a little bit more information. You can find out all about the various domains and activities that you get involved in. You can find the Connectathon results if you're looking up what the product capabilities are online. Vendor integration statements are all available there. Okay. Now I think it's time for your Q&A.
I would like to invite our speakers to take seats on this table. There are three chairs here, and when they are coming there, I would like to introduce also two other people who were very essential, I would say critical, to our activities at IHE this year. It's Sue Salkowitz, American Immunization Registry Association. She served as a liaison. Sue, could you just say hi? She served as a liaison from the American Immunization Registry Association and this technical activity that's been done at IHE on immunization profile. And another person is right here, Sandy Thames. She works for CDC, and she was the one person who actually did a tremendous job pushing for the cancer content profile at IHE. So I would like to thank them for. We can take questions right now.
Or comment.
I will repeat the question. Or could you just come?
Okay, just a question for Eileen. You're able to convert made up a version 2 message to a clinical document, and you're able to convert a clinical document back to an HL7 version 2 message. Is it correct in all cases that you get the same thing out that you put in, or are there semantic problems or and transmission loss?
Well, the immunization content was developed recently, and the HL7 version 2 has been around for a long time. So there, well, so everything that was in HL7 version 2, there was very thorough attempt to include it in the version 3. So, but there are elements in the version 3 that may not be available in the version 2. So there could be some loss in that direction.
Ah.
I'm not sure the implementation is far enough along yet to say that that's been thoroughly tested. Okay. The immunization content profile was just developed this year and has just come out of public comment, so it's a little early. But we have in the interoperability showcase, if you care to visit, we do translate in that direction from the version 3 to the version 2.
From emergence, I actually have an observation and a question. The observation is, I'm not sure how many people in this room read any of the IIT profiles. They're actually extremely, I don't know how to describe it. If you are coming from HL7 or any of the CDC standards, they stand in stark contrast in terms of clarity, preciseness, and everything. And I've actually read quite a few and did some work on one of the profiles, the 6 profile. So I strongly recommend everyone to at least try reading at least one profile. And my question is to probably Dr. Elskin or Laurie. There's a new standard in EHR. It's called CCHIT. They actually have 2 standards, one for ambulatory EHR and the other one for inpatient. They're fairly new. And they give a lot of detail on things like medical reconciliation. So my question is, how does it tie into some of the new IHE profiles? Because so far, there has not been any EHR standard. Any vendor can just come in and say, we have an EHR product, but that's no longer true.
If I can just
I'm not going to respond to this question, but for those who are in the room, I would like just to clarify. It's been said here that there is another organization called CCHIT. It's Certification Commission for Health Information Technology. From public health perspectives, there were not a lot of participation right now in this activity, but it's growing. And Marty LaVenture, right here in the room, who will be public health representative at CCHIT, correct? At least there have been nominations made to this organization. And Dave Ross, who you may know here, also is there. The question was with regards to that organization, Certification Commission for Health Information Technology, and how their specification for standards are relevant to IHE and HITSP work. Just HITSP first.
Okay. So theoretically, what's supposed to happen is after the secretary has recognized the interoperability specifications in HITSP, that CCHIT will incorporate those constructs into the certification process. Now, the current certification that's done on electronic health records only includes the laboratory, a part of the laboratory ER-EHR interoperability specification that came out of HITSP, but does not include all of the constructs. And the problem is that they have difficulty in their tooling in terms of how they would test in their certifications. They wanted to be, you know, consistent across the board for all the vendors, and they wanted a way to be able to implement these things so that they were certain at the end when they certified somebody that they met the criteria. So, I mean, those are all very noble things, but it takes a bit of tooling in order to be able to do it well, and they have, they're still working on that. And so they didn't have the capability to really implement everything that we've published so far. So in terms of IHE, I'll let Lori talk about that in terms of how IHE interacts with the Certification Commission. You should know, just interestingly, that the Certification Commission is a private entity, that HITSP is really funded and part of the ONC activities. And CCHIT receives funding from them, but is not of them. It's actually a private organization. And so the government doesn't have complete control over the Certification Commission. And so there's some tension there that exists that has yet to be completely worked out.
From the IHE perspective, I mentioned the Connectathon testing. However, the Connectathon testing is not a certification process. There are certainly some similarities and the potential to align with the Connectathon testing as part of CCHIT certification, where those profiles and the HITSB specification and the CCHIT certification align.
And I also have another question to the audience. When you heard this, who are IT people here in the room? You just, so half. And half of just normal people, like public health people. How difficult for you was this terminology? Overwhelming? Easy? Done at all? In the middle. And that's something that we believe is one of our challenges in working with these groups, because we're overwhelmed, we don't understand their language, and we need to do something about it. Education would help. If public health informatics curriculum would include more courses on standards. It's just in a very, very emergent stages right now. And we need your help also with that as well, saying what we don't understand in this discussion, so we know what to put in the academic curriculum or continue public health informatics training curriculum.
You say more participation is needed, but if you were or just beginning to get into this, you know, it's kind of overwhelming, all the different acronyms, different standards. You know, where's a good starting place just to get the high picture, and then you can drill down from there? Otherwise, it's, you know, you don't even know if you're participating in the right standards committee. You're giving the best in the best place, but, you know, to contribute.
I represent public health data center consortium. I know the answer exactly how it should be said. But I first would like to hear those of you who just been involved in these activities. How did you know about where to start? And did you feel accomplished by participating in these committees? Like the few people who were at HITSB, did you think that your voice is heard? Can you share anything?
I'm Sandy Kim with the Cancer Registry, and I'd just like to share because we kind of fell into it. and we were on the HITSB, one of the HITSB work groups, just by chance, and Anna threw up that she wanted to do this white paper, and she was there. And so for us, we didn't know where we were going. So we were exactly what you said, is how do you know which group to go to, and are you on the right group, and you just don't know. And so we feel like we've gotten, I think, in the right spot. But again, I think it's a good question, and how do new programs, you know, where do you start? Is it HITSB? And we struggle with that in cancer. Should we be in IG or should we be in HITSB? And so it's I think that will help people and help other domains know where to start, what do they need to have in place before they go to these groups, because it's overwhelming. You go to some of the HITSB groups and you don't know what they're talking about. Plus, they may be focused on a particular domain that's not really relevant to you, so you think, oh, well, I don't need to be in this. And it's trying to figure out what pieces of it do apply. And so that's just my...
Okay, ARA, the American Immunization Registry Association, has been a member of HL7 for a number of years. A number of our members are here in this audience who have been very active in HL7. About 3 years ago, they sent me to the Data Standards Consortium and made a recommendation that ARA join the Data Standards Consortium as an organizational member, which we are. And what that has done for ARA is to multiply the efforts of our own work by collaborating with other organizations in the standards work. So we have representation through the Data Standards Consortium on a lot of these activities that we could not support in our own organization. And you can see that we were successful through our membership in the Data Standards Consortium, our own members in participating in the IHE white paper and in having standards go to HITSB and IHE, which is quite remarkable considering that we're not part of PIN.
I guess I can share something which I haven't heard any of the speakers speak, which is the way I was driven to IHE is I came from medical imaging. I used to work for Siemens, like DICOM standard. So when I started working for HL7, it was again a big shock to me because of the quality and everything. So I was looking for something more concrete, and there's a very nice, I guess, six-part paper written, I'm not sure by who, but if you go to, what's that, Medline. Yeah, you'll see that six-part, it's called the IHE Primer, so there is a six-part article, very nicely written. Not Medline, I'm sorry, that's the NIH,
yes.
What's it called?
He's the producer.
So that series is extremely good. It's got six papers. Each is about three or four pages, but it tells you exactly where IHE stands as opposed to HL7 or anything else, and how actually it brings everything together. So that's a great place to start.
And a gentleman on the back.
Yeah, I just wanted to ask a question. Was there any discussion in reference to getting the health information survey and the health IQ scorecard and the OMB requirements for identifying systems that align to the interoperability standards and reporting and reporting out on that?
Analyst, do you pronounce the question?
Yeah.
Was about surveys, right?
Well,
So as we were saying before, that as the secretary accepts and then recognizes the interoperability specifications, it becomes mandatory that those become part of the scorecard and part of all the RFAs to vendors. So you'll see more and more of that happening. Already the biosurveillance IS has been recognized by the secretary, and the quality IS was accepted. So it's on its way toward recognition, at which point it'll become incorporated into that evaluation process for RFAs. So that's important if you do business with the government. So can I ask you a question now that Anna, how many of you have a need in your practice for standardization that is yet unmet? So what would it be? No, seriously. I mean, because people need to hear what the prioritization should be. Sir?
Well, I think our QA standards, I don't deal a lot with HL7. But I've got three programmers that do. And I have another one that deals with Sean Brannis at the Institute of their stuff. And I'm trying to understand what a lot of the issues are and what they're doing. We're bringing in new labs. We're converting a lot of existing ones to feed into our surveillance systems. And it seems like each one of them, we have to remap everything to get it into an HL7 standard. It also deals with SNOMED and all the other things they're working on.
You know, the other thing that it's crossed my mind that nobody's brought up, but I think if we're thinking about this, it's a good thing to actually put on the table, is that as we get more and more of this data, we can ask questions that are quite varied across all these different data types. And we run into a considerable multiple comparisons problem in terms of having false alerts, you know, where we're looking for things in the data, but we're looking, instead of for one thing or two things, we're looking for hundreds or thousands of things. And therefore, in the end, we could have false positives just by chance alone. And I think there's going to be considerable epidemiological work and standardization that will need to happen in order to make use of a lot of this new type of data feed that perhaps public health has not had in such great quantity before. So there's challenges. Stuart?
Well, the other thing we're going to run into is not the false positive, but also the false negative, and bringing up a problem that I call representational integrity. And this is something that I think you need to worry about in this, is the extent to which combination of information models and terminology allow the same idea to be represented in multiple ways, and that you do not recognize, because I think that's a major problem that very few people have really started to look at. It's particularly important in the epidemiologic.
Yeah. Unrecognized ambiguity. I was at a panel.
It's not unrecognized ambiguity.
It is. Well, it is ambiguity, because it's two ways of representing the same thing. So, you know, that I think it was with John White and a bunch of people for this HL7 service-oriented architecture meeting they had. And I got up, I think I shook up the place a little bit. I said that if we use these standards, you know, compositional standards with these models, and we create this double way of saying things like this, we're worse than ICD-9-CM would be just currently. We actually create a bigger problem. We need to make sure that we can algorithmically identify these things that are named differently but mean the same thing. If we can't do that logically, then we're actually dangerous. Dangerous. It's very scary. And I recommend all of you who have a strong interest in this to learn about modern formalisms like description logics and look at languages like the web ontology language and other description logic-based languages that will help us to reconcile things that get represented differently. You know, as simple as, you know, if you have a term, you know, tibial fracture, and it's on the left side, and you have one term like that, you have another representation that goes fracture, you know, has finding site tibia, has laterality left. You know, those are the same exact idea, but they're represented in two distinctly different and computably different ways. And if you can represent this so that mathematically you can tell they're the same thing, you're fine. But if you can't, you have a major problem with false negatives that's going to cause harm to patients. And so I think it's incumbent upon all of us as standards, developers, users, whatever, to take very seriously our responsibility for our patients and to make sure that we do not do any harm in our work. You know, that's one of the best interpretations of the Hippocratic Oath is, above all else, do no harm. The other one I like a lot, it's kind of funny, is I will accept no payment before the cure. But I don't know. I don't know too many doctors who actually will do that.
I wanted to respond to both of those last concerns, the concern about complexity and every connection being new, and the concern about authenticity of the information. And that is a lot of where the XDS, the CDA model is driving, the version 3 structured document model is trying to drive, is that by having structured documents in a common format like XDS, that if you have N public health systems and M provider systems that you want to talk to, right now with version 2, you need N times M connections. But if you have everything in a common format, then you only need N plus M connections. So it greatly reduces the complexity of the overall problem. The second thing is, with structured documents, you do have this authentication component. So once a document is created by a provider, that information is not changed. You can create new information, you can take it, tear it apart, create new information, but then you have to sign that document. So you have some sort of traceability as to the source of information. So those are exactly, we didn't really get into that, but those are exactly the points that we're driving to with the new XDS model. And again, the interoperability showcase has more information on that. Thanks.
There are actually two. The question is apparently the encounter message, but it's not actually true. That the encounter message from HITSBI originally referenced IHE, and that the revision references directly to HL7. What the encounter message has a sister document, which is an encounter document. When we developed the biosurveillance specifications, we said we wanted to be able to support both the emerging document world and the existing messaging world. So the encounter message has always referenced directly HL7 messages. The encounter document has always referenced the IHE, in that case it's C4, the IHE medical summary document. It's not that those have changed. It might be that somebody was looking at one document and then, because they're both servicing encounters, looked at the other.
I just want to make a comment, because I've heard twice today the assertion that more data leads to false positives. And I would challenge that, because certainly in the work we've done with record matching over the years, more information leads to fewer false positives. And you know, if more information from more sources is creating more false positives, I would fault the analysis and not the fact that you had more information.
No, I agree with you that it's a problem with the analysis, not the information. Absolutely. It is that we have, as of today, not been prepared for the types of analysis that we'll be faced with in the future. And that requires some additional work on the part of our colleagues in epidemiology and some of the biostatistical tools that we have today. We've gone from you know Bonferroni's to high grade simulations with 100,000 runs to try to deal with the multiple comparison issue, and that can actually help you to decrease the false positive rate. But I agree with you that with more reliable information, you should, if you analyze it correctly, have fewer false positives. I agree.
Anna, if you don't mind, I wanted to go back to the question of when should you be involved in which committee, just from having experience in all three. If you're looking at some of the broader implementation issues, what the NHIN focus, the AHIC focus, very, very broad spectrum goals, HITSBI really is the place to come to, whether it's from the perspective technical committee levels or from the technical committee levels that are dealing with reuse of software implementations. If you are a visionary and you're looking at longer term analysis and designs, that really is a standards world. Not that standards take forever, but they really are broader in scope. They are more detailed modeling. They're going to be far more comprehensive. And IHE is something in the middle. It's very, you have business need with a very specific scope. You have an engineering need with a very specific scope and something to implement. And it's very fast track. So if that helps any guidance. Now, the other thing I would point out is Public Health Data Standards Consortium can help you filter through that. You know, Anna's already, I think, done a good job of helping guide the Cancer Registry, Immunization Registry folks into some of the related and appropriate activities.
Downloaded, you can just get it from the website.
Any comments that you would like to make?
I'd like to thank you all very much for coming. This is a wonderful session, and we appreciate your thoughts and ideas. They'll help our work as well.
Two more co-chairs in the room, and we still have time. We have two more co-chairs in the room from HISPA Population TC, and they are from very different stakeholder groups. So Peter is MD. Lloyd Eisenberg is also MD, but he works with Siemens. And our famous Steve Sandale works with TC. Maybe you can share with us some perspectives of how, what brought you in this world working with public health. Okay, what brought CDAT, probably clear, but what brought Siemens?
Actually, I can make it very quick. I was first asked about 3 years ago to see what we could do to help our customers with Siemens send data to BioSense. And I said, if that's all we do, we can provide some integration resources to help do the interfacing to a BioSense system. But if we really wanted to help our customers, we had to deal with any kinds of data that need to be sent to public health, quality, research, et cetera. And that's what got me involved. So I called up Anna because I had met her previously, and I said, how can I get involved? She said, we're starting HITSB Population Health Group. And so it's all started there. But that's, and why IHE was because a lot of the interfacing that's occurring, that the rather than point to point, a lot of what's being required for either ambulatory or inpatient vendors to create for customers and for all of our customers to be able to interoperate, it's using many IHE profiles. So in order to be able to use that also for quality, et cetera, and public health and research, that's how I got involved in IHE. So I stopped raising my hand to volunteer for a while, but that's how I got to be co-chair of those two committees.